Russell's man. After Tricia finished lunch with Asa Ammons, she decided to trek back down to Possum Hollow. She thought briefly about heading back to the house to get a gun from the gun safe for protection. Instead, she drove there directly after leaving Glenn a message about where she would be. When she arrived at Possum Hollow Road, she decided not to stop at Granger's or at the Brown House. She continued to the top of the hollow and on to Rattlesnake Ridge. A short way along the ridge, she encountered the abandoned farmstead where Sally disappeared when she first met the woman. Tricia decided to explore, not knowing what she would find. She drove onto the property, managing to park her car behind the house in such a way that it would not be visible from the road. After walking around the house taking pictures on her cell phone, she started to walk around the barn. A short distance downhill from the barn, she discovered a trail leading into what she surmised as being the trail which paralleled Possum Hollow Road. Tricia turned on the GPS tracking application on her phone before taking off. A quarter mile down the trail into the woods, she encountered a clearing. Rotting remnants of human visitation were scattered about a grassy area, now a golden paradise, anticipating the imminent arrival of winter. A bouquet of weather-worn plastic roses placed next to a simple wooden cross near the trail caught her attention. A memorial, she said to herself. Makeshift, but still a memorial. She noted the position of the memorial before continuing down the path. Another quarter mile or so down the path, she smelled cigarette smoke and heard the grumbling of someone making their way up the path. Soon she discerned that Earl was trudging in her direction. "Earl, I'm up the path about 50 feet from you," she called out when she finally spotted him. The man froze momentarily before lifting his rifle and pointing it in Tricia's direction. "Who's that?" he challenged. "Tricia Michaels. We met a few days ago, remember?" "Didn't no one tell you not to come traipsing around here, woman? What the hell are you doing?" "I came down from the abandoned farm up on Rattlesnake Ridge," she told him. "I saw the path and decided to see where it led." "Don't come no further if you know what's good for you. You better get back up that hill and on your way before one of Russell's men find that you're here." "I parked out of sight of the road. I take it your place is further down this path?" "Yep. And you don't need no coming down any further upsetting my woman. You and your questions have caused enough trouble already around here. Just turn around and go back where you come from." By this time, Earl was almost in Tricia's face, his rifle still pointed in her direction. "I have no problem with that," she told him, mustering up as much courage as she could while having a firearm pointed at her. "If you don't mind, maybe you can walk with me at least up to the clearing up the way." Earl scowled for a moment and lowered his rifle. "I don't suppose it would hurt," he told her. "I was headed that way anyway to find us some dinner." She marched back up the path she had come down, with Earl marching behind her no more than 10 feet away. They stopped when they got to the clearing. "You know the way back up, right?" Tricia nodded. "Could you spare me a minute, Earl?" "Guess it couldn't hurt." Well, some of the pressure was off. "There, on the pathway heading back up to the farm, that's a memorial, isn't it?" "Yep," he said, nodding his head. "It's for Sally's ma. She's buried out here somewhere, maybe up to Lou Gilbert's farm." "The abandoned farm up the ridge?" Earl nodded slowly. "The same Lou Gilbert who had the bar up in Prentice?" she asked. "That same Lou Gilbert," Earl confirmed. They stood in silence in front of the makeshift memorial for a minute or two, collecting their thoughts. "You better get on up the trail before one of Russell's men comes round and finds your car," he warned. "They still go round here from time to time." One more question," she asked. "Is this where Sally was raped by Sheriff Ross?"
"You know?"
She nodded her head. "I heard she was pregnant when her mother was killed, and that Sheriff Ross was most likely the father. I suspect that he might have done it here."
"There is an eyewitness, you know. That was my pap," he said quietly. "He worked for Gilbert and Sheriff Ross. He took naked pictures of girls my age and younger who then went to Kentucky. He died not long after Sally's ma disappeared. They told us that he was on the Silver Bridge when it came down. I found out different. He was killed by the same man what killed Sally's ma, Quentin Russell.
Earl reached into his coat pocket and pulled out a cigarette. After lighting it and taking a few puffs, he continued.
Lou Gilbert and Quentin and Sheriff Ross all like to call themselves a family, he told her. They was involved in all sorts of evils like gambling and selling girls as slaves. They're still around, at least as far as I've heard. There are places around here where they grow marijuana and make crack. They always get away with it, too, mostly because of Russell's men. I think he's a deputy from Lawrence County. Makes it real easy for them to go out and break the law when they're the ones responsible for enforcing it.
I'd imagine it would, Tricia agreed.
I appreciate the warning, Earl, she continued. As far as anyone is concerned, this conversation never took place. Tell Sally she doesn't have to worry about me coming around while Russell's men are out and about. I'll catch up with her later. Keep her safe, won't you?
I'll get her done, Earl smiled.
Tricia turned and headed up the path to the farm. She paused briefly to spot Earl headed on a path heading west from the clearing. There may have been a virtual maze of trails in this part of the county. Worth investigating at any rate, she thought. When she arrived back at the old farmstead, the thought hit her that Earl told her the farm belonged to Lou Gilbert, not Johnny Ross, as she was told earlier. A property search might provide her with more information. She briefly thought about exploring the abandoned barn before heading back to Magnolia by way of Rattlesnake Ridge Road. The barn could wait. The house could wait, too. They weren't going anywhere, nor would any of the secrets they might have held. A new concern. Tricia reached her car without any further incident. She decided to check the Mustang out thoroughly when she got there, just in case any of Russell's men were in the neighborhood. Her cell phone rang just as she pulled out onto Rattlesnake Ridge Road. You might ought to want to come out east and join me at this wreck about 3 miles west of Possum Hollow on the westbound lane, Sheriff Roy scolded Tricia on her cell phone. I know you don't chase ambulances, but there's a body out here you might be interested in seeing. I'm not that far away, Tricia told him. I'll be there as quickly as the traffic will let me.
We're waving him through right now, he advised. Just be careful coming down here, okay?
Tricia drove west on Rattlesnake Ridge to the crossroad at Pearl. She turned down Pearl Road to head back down to the main highway. As she approached, she saw the traffic was tied up in both directions from the accident Sheriff Roy told her about. It took her at least 15 minutes from the time she reached the highway until the time she reached the accident scene.
I thought you said you were waving traffic through, Tricia scolded Sheriff Roy when she finally met him.
I thought you said to take it easier on the gas pedal after you got married, Roy shot back. Will Seeley told me that you were headed out toward Possum Hollow earlier like you were headed to a fire.
Tricia saw Deputy Seeley about 75 feet away, guarding a tarp on the ground. Roy led her to a deputy, then excused him before pulling back the tarp.
Sweet holy Jesus, Tricia gasped.
Under the tarp lay the body of a young woman, no more than 17. She was naked, marked with contusions, bruises, and tattoos. We've already taken pictures, Roy told her. We're waiting on the coroner to come pick her up.
Any idea who she is? Tricia asked.
I have my suspicions, but we can't know for sure. Not yet.
Is it okay if I turn the body over?
You want me to get a stick so you can poke her with it? Sheriff Roy kidded.
Sure, do whatever it is you do.
Tricia spent a little less than 5 minutes examining the body and taking pictures of her own. She paid special attention to several tattoos and to what seemed to be a track mark in the girl's arms. Playing a hunch, she looked carefully at the victim's neck. Sure enough, there were signs that she might have been garroted. Tricia's examination was interrupted by an altercation closer to the highway.
What's that woman doing up there with my girl Taylor?
A man dressed in camouflage, wearing a set of heavy boots and a hunting cap, marched straight toward the scene, making demands.
She has no right. Let me take her and have her buried proper.
George, how do you know that that's Taylor over there? Roy argued back. She's been missing and you didn't report it?
Well, I'm reporting it now, the man insisted. Now let me see her and take her away before you ghouls take her in, tear her apart, and make groundless accusations. George shoved Sheriff Roy. After a short scuffle involving three deputies, George was handcuffed and put in the back of the sheriff's cruiser.
Who's he? Tricia asked Sheriff Roy after she finished her examination of the body.
George Sharp. He lives about a mile away up towards Pearl. He has a girl named Taylor, about the same age as our Jane Doe. He's been homeschooling her, at least that's what the neighbors told the school board. What he's been teaching her, though, is up for grabs. We've had him in from time to time on complaints from the neighbors. He has an attorney who comes in and bails him out when he's screaming about conspiracies and his Second Amendment rights.
Well, if that was his daughter, she's been abused, Tricia pointed out. It wouldn't surprise me if his wanting to have her body released directly to him would be so that he could cover up what he's been doing to her, or with her. Some of the tattoos on Jane Doe's body are consistent with marks found on the Worry Girl and the girl from Adams County. And there's indication that she's been garroted just like the others. I hate to say it, but we may have a serial killer on our hands. She looked over toward the cruiser containing George Sharp. He appeared to be trying the best he could to get out of the car by banging his head on the car window. Sheriff Roy admonished the man to cut it out. He appeared to stop for a moment. He smiled at the sheriff, then leaned over. Moments later, the back end of the car lifted off the ground as an explosion from the inside blew out the windows and the life of the man in the back seat. Roy rushed to the car while stray parts of George Sharp lay in the smoky ruins of what remained of the vehicle.
Shit, Roy swore. We need more backup. Let's see if we can get these damn rubberneckers off the highway and detour to the old road while we get this mess cleared up.
He started barking orders, and within 15 minutes, no one other than law enforcement was on the westbound lanes of the highway. Tricia faded away while others did their work on the Sharps and the victim of the initial accident. She had nothing more to do other than to sit in her car and go over some of the notes she carried with her. About an hour and a half after she arrived, Sheriff Roy came over to her car and tapped on her window.
I need to go up and have a talk with the Sharp woman about her husband, Roy told her when she rolled down her window. I might need your help in talking to her.
Well, I appreciate your trust, but you really ought to get someone else to go with you. Tricia was concerned about a possible confrontation like the one she and Glenn had with Sally Brown, or the confrontation she had with Earl just a short while earlier.
Some of the people in the area carry guns and aren't afraid to use them, she pointed out. An ambush may not be out of the question.
And that's exactly why I need you to go with me, Roy countered. You're well known. You have credibility with these people, and you carry, don't you?
Not this time, Roy, Tricia told him before reluctantly agreeing to follow him to the Sharps' house.
The property frontage was marked every 100 feet or so with prominent no trespassing signs. The driveway to the house was blocked by a gate. Sheriff Roy stopped his car, opened the gate, and drove through. Tricia followed, wondering what she had gotten herself into. 100 yards before arriving at the house, a crudely painted sign declared, "If you made it this far, prepare to die." There was no challenge to the two-car motorcade. With what remained of the head of the household on his way to the morgue and Prentice, Tricia didn't think there would be a problem until she noticed that there were bars in front of the windows of the ramshackle house. They got out of their cars. It was eerily quiet. Tricia noticed that Roy's right hand was close to his sidearm as if he was expecting trouble. Roy got to the front door. It was protected by a set of bars much like those covering the windows. He used a billy club to reach through the bars and bang on the door.
Sheriff's Department, anyone home?
He repeated the bang and his request twice more with no response. He repeated the action a fourth time, this time with his right hand bringing the full force of the club on the doorknob behind the bars. The door gave way, swinging inside to reveal a dark and emotionally empty house. Roy reached in his back pocket and drew out a zippered pouch. He pulled a pair of tools from the pouch and proceeded to work the deadbolt on the bars, which prevented them from entering.
Probable cause, he told Tricia when he finally opened the gate.
He put the tools back into his back pocket and drew his weapon. If a man is able to commit suicide in case he got arrested, You might have booby traps waiting in the house, Roy warned, signaling for Tricia to stay back. He'll kill you, then me. Go away before he gets back.
The voice seemed to come from behind a tattered couch. Roy urged Tricia forward.
Hello, Tricia called when Roy signaled her. We're from the county sheriff's office. We give them back the money we owed you to your man an hour ago.
What money?
The money you gived us for giving you Taylor.
A quiet sob was heard in the area where the voice was coming from.
Who was taking your money? Your people, Russell's men.
Russell's men don't work for the sheriff, ma'am, Roy spoke up. I'm the sheriff, and anyone claiming to be Russell's men have no authority here.
Tricia heard more sobbing and a quiet voice of a woman trying to comfort a child.
Go back outside, Roy. Let me talk with her alone, Tricia suggested.
Roy backed away. Tricia stayed just inside the doorway where she came in.
Sheriff's gone, she told the hidden woman after waiting for a minute or so. Another few minutes passed before the woman spoke again.
Where is he?
Where's George?
Was he your husband?
No.
Yes, I mean, when was the last time you were out of this house?
I ain't left. He'd hurt me if I left.
Tricia was stunned. The woman she was talking to was a prisoner. She paused before speaking again.
He can no longer hurt you. He's gone.
No, the woman wailed. He can't be. He was just here. He went to get Taylor at the highway and they was coming home. You're lying. He's coming back.
Waves of anguish were heard from the woman, joined by cries from the child. She stood up and hurled something in Trisha's direction, her aim thrown off by a child clinging to her for dear life. She collapsed again, pounding her fist on the floor, sobbing at the news of her loss. Tricia dared to approach the woman to comfort both her and the child.
She's pretty, Grandma. Is she an angel?
The child, a boy, asked once that they were cried out. By this time, all three of them were on the floor. From behind her, Tricia heard other voices. Roy had summoned help. A crew of people came into the house and started taking pictures. A deputy approached Tricia, the woman, and the boy.
I'll handle this, Tricia told the deputy.
She helped the woman and her child up from the floor and coaxed them to the front door. The woman hesitated when she got to the bars which stood at the door. Tricia coaxed her outside and guided her past the cruiser. The woman stopped and looked back at the house.
He ain't coming back? She asked.
He's not coming back, Tricia assured her. The woman stood for a short moment or two while Tricia opened the front passenger door of her car. The boy slipped right in without hesitation and claimed the back seat. The woman finally turned, got in the car, and didn't look back. On the way out the front gate, she relaxed.
I ain't going back, she declared. I'd kill myself before I'd ever go back.